A page from local history today on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. If you want to talk about Dear History, you should talk to Neil Dahlstrom. And we will today on Scribble. Well, Neil, history in the archives at the Deer, that has to be a vast place.
It's a vast place. 181 years of John Deere history and, of course, a little touch of everything else that's happened around the world in those 181 years.
And do you have the records going way back to John Deere?
We have bits and pieces. Our records actually predate John Deere. The oldest item in our collection is a U.S. Patent Gazette that starts in 1790. We've got a full run of patent gazettes from 1790 to 2002.
So when did the archives for Deere get set up?
The archives itself began in 1976. It started because our CEO at the time, William Hewitt, who was the last Deere family member to be CEO, hired a professor from Dartmouth named Wayne Braille to write corporate history. And, of course, to write, you need research materials. So they issued a company-wide bulletin, started collecting materials. We were also fortunate
From where?
From employees, from departments. But we were fortunate because Deere had an agricultural library since the very early 20th century. So they were keeping, for example, they had handwritten journals by a guy named Robert Tate, who was one of John Deere's partners in Moline when Deere moved here. He actually came with Deere from Grand Detour to Moline in 1848. They had speeches from executives. They had some advertising. So they had kind of some core pieces that started to make up the archives.
Do you have do you separate family history from corporate history?
We don't. They overlap quite a bit, as you can imagine. It's a family business. John Deere's daughters married local businessmen who joined the business. John Deere himself didn't leave us a lot of written history. There's only a few letters that we have in our collection.
That's what I wondered, if you had any much personal stuff from Deere himself.
There's not a whole lot. There's a few letters. I'm only aware of 7 or 8 photographs of John Deere himself. Probably my favorite piece in the entire collection is we actually have a 2-piece wool bathing suit owned by John Deere. And this was handed down through the family. It was given to the archives by Bill Hewitt. And we actually had it conserved recently and put behind UV glass, and it's hanging on the wall because I just love it so much.
What is the difference between an archive and a museum? It sounds as if you have objects there. I think of archives as papers. You have objects there as well?
We have objects as well. And it really just goes back to the evolution of the archive. So the archive itself, kind of what you think about, what I call analog records, correspondence, photographs, is the core of the archives collection. But we also have a number of 3-dimensional objects. We manage the company's corporate art collection. We also manage the historical equipment collection. So that's about 400 pieces of equipment, ranging from walking plows to, this year, we acquired an 8400R, a 400 horsepower tractor, which is our 100th anniversary tractor.
Where is there space to put all this stuff?
We've got a number of warehouses. We've got equipment in 40 plus John Deere locations across North America.
Really?
So that includes the John Deere Pavilion in Moline, the John Deere Tractor and Engine Museum in Waterloo, Iowa, factories, out in Washington, D.C., in our public affairs office, we have a silver-plated walking plow that was made for a World's Fair. So we've got pieces all over the place.
So now how did you get involved with the Deer Archives?
Well, I've wanted to actually be in history since high school.
Okay.
I'm from the Quad Cities. When I was in high school, one of my teachers gave me the book, The Killer Angels.
Ooh.
And which I just completely devoured. And as a family, when we went on vacations, we went to Chicago, we went to museums. So I fell in love with museums very early. I volunteered at the Putnam Museum in their discovery room for a while when I was in high school. I volunteered at the Rock Island Arsenal Museum. So I kind of got some behind-the-scenes exposure and really fell in love with the written word, with paper. Mm-hmm. And went to Monmouth College and studied history and classics. And then I went to Eastern Illinois University and got my master's in historical administration. And there I had an assistantship with the State Archives. So It kind of went from museums to general history to archives.
When did you start with deer?
I started with deer in 2001.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things that just kind of strangely happened. After graduate school, I moved to Virginia. I was working in a startup archive that was documenting the history of the commercial space industry, which is relatively new still. And I spent 2 years out there. In 2001, I had a friend who worked at John Deere, and he said, John Deere's hiring an archivist. And I said, well, I'm not really interested. I'm not interested in moving back to the Quad Cities right now because I'm a Civil War buff, and I'm in D.C. and Virginia, and this is where I want to be. And kind of thought about it a little more, and I came in for an interview and got the job. And my office is a mile from the house I grew up in, and I had no idea it was there.
So you pretty much have been responsible for creating the kind of archives that it is today, right?
In some part. So when I joined in 2001, essentially the same staff had been there since 1976.
Mm-hmm.
And they just did a phenomenal job. We're unique in many respects, well, for a couple of reasons. In the world of corporate archives, we are very much developed more as a business archive. When you visit other corporate archives, if you go to Coke or Anheuser-Busch or Disney, they tend to be more focused on the brand, more focused on marketing. Mm-hmm. And we very much were kind of created as a business archive. We started to kind of make a transition into a brand archive, so we're looking more at those visual materials. But I've been fortunate to be there for a long time now and kind of start to put my handprints on it.
But is this a public or a private archive?
It's both. And so we've got five members of our team. So we have art curators, and we have an equipment manager, and we have a couple archivists. We have a digital archivist as we're digitizing collections. And much of our research and our work is for communications and marketing and for the law department. Most of the public research we do now is remotely. It's pretty rare that someone will physically come to our office. We are available, but we're not advertising.
Mm-hmm.
So that's my wishy-washy way of saying, yes, we're open to the public, but as we have time.
So how is the collection cataloged? I mean, if I wanted to come and look up something about John Deere's life or something.
Mm-hmm. So it starts by working with an archivist. We've got several collections catalogs. We kind of have a love-hate relationship with the way that we're organized, and if you talk to most archivists, they'll say the same thing. For the first 30 years of our existence, most of our materials were cataloged at an item level, which means you have one document and one catalog record. So I can very quickly look up an advertising brochure from 1921 based on the title, based on the document number, based on metadata that we've inputted into the database. And that's kind of the ideal for archivists, is I've got a record for every single piece of paper in the collection. Well, the downside of that is you have to know every piece of paper in the collection,
right,
and how to look for it. And so we've actually kind of reversed things, and in the last 4 or 5 years, we've actually created our first finding aids. These are for large collections of papers. So if you're looking for – if you want to research the Charles Deere papers, which is probably 10 cubic feet. A cubic foot is about a banker's box, 12 by 15 inches. Then we can pull that finding aid. They're organized alphabetically by whoever Charles Deere was corresponding with. And we're an archive. Every collection is different. Some are well-described. Some are lacking description. You may find a collection that says photographs 1920 to 1940, 20 boxes, and you hope you never have to go looking for one.
Right.
And those are all decisions we make up front as archivists. We call that appraisal, which is what's the potential historical significance? Are there maybe alternatives in the collection that are already better cataloged and described? Based on past research requests, what's the likelihood we're going to get into this collection? So there's a lot that goes into actually appraising and describing a collection. Just because you keep it doesn't mean it's as valuable as something else.
Do you have any limits on who can use the collection and how they can use it? I mean, do they have to sign an agreement of some kind?
They do, and that way we operate the same way that, right. that most archives do. So we're not open or closed to users, but certain collections are open and closed. We have records that are still considered confidential. We have records created in 1890 that are considered confidential by John Deere. We have records where there's a legal hold on it, so they're not available for research. We have records that maybe we have physical ownership, but we don't own the copyright. So you can look at it, but we can't reproduce it. So part of our job is managing the intellectual property, which is something that's hard for people to understand. If you're a John Deere customer and you want a photo from 1960, if it has a person on that tractor, I can't necessarily release it to you unless I have a model release from that operator in 1960 who we probably don't know who it is.
So how large a staff do you have to handle all of this?
We have a staff of five right now, and I say right now because that may fluctuate depending on projects. We've got a long list of suppliers. We've got a company in Kentucky we work with to digitize film. We've got, we think, about 10,000 16 and 35 millimeter films in the collection back to the 1920s. We have suppliers in Chicago, in Utah that digitize photographs for us. We have a full-time digital archivist that does digitization and retouching. So right now it's a staff of five. And we brought in people for the summer before. We brought in people on a one-year or two-year contract. It all depends on what projects we have lined up.
How much of your time is spent doing research for a department that wants you to look up something, the history of a particular?
Yeah, that's a tough question to answer. A lot of questions that we get are very, what we say, they're very transactional. There's probably 25 questions that are asked 95% of the time. Mm-hmm. And so you know the answer. Three-quarters of those questions, the answer is probably we don't know, unfortunately. But we differentiate between what we call a research request, which is transactional, typically take 15 minutes to an hour, and then we have projects. We've had projects that have lasted 2 or 3 years.
Such as,
this past weekend in Waterloo, Iowa, we just celebrated 100 years of John Deere tractors. This is the 100th anniversary of our entry into the tractor business. We started on that 2.5 years ago from a research perspective. That's everything from I started myself with John Deere's tractor development in 1912. 2.5 years later, I've gotten all the way to 1920.
But how, you know, with all these locations and the scope of the projects, how can you manage with just five people? That doesn't sound right.
If you have five people, you manage with five. If you have 10, you manage with 10.
But how about the different are there people at the different locations?
We've got a lot of help from a lot of locations, and we're responsible for historical collections worldwide. That doesn't mean that we can go out and capture every document and every record. A big part of our responsibility is reviewing our scope. And a challenge now, especially with digital records, is our scope keeps getting smaller. Departments are now responsible for managing more of their records because they're sitting in proprietary databases. They have to manage the software. Those are things we're not capable of doing any longer. We have a lot of John Deere customers, collectors, fans, employees who are very much the institutional memory. We kind of look at it as we're the stewards of the collection and of that memory. But we now actively go out and try to document specific things going on in the company. It used to be we could just wait for people to retire. They would send us 100 boxes of records a week before they left the building. That doesn't happen any longer. Now we go out and we actually determine what we think is going to be historically significant. We go out and find those collections. We work with the people who are there. We're doing more oral histories now, which is filling in some gaps for us. And from my seat, it's challenging because we know everything we're missing, and you can't keep everything.
You yourself have written a couple of books on John Deere. Is that on your own, or has that been a part of your being an archivist?
It's a combination of the two. It came out of just my interest.
Okay.
For example, the John Deere story, which is a biography of John and Charles
right.
Deere. Started because I found some juicy letters in the collection.
Okay.
The short version of the story is John Deere was in his early 80s. He typically spent the winter in California, and he was out there visiting his nephew, George. And George was writing letters to Charles Deere here in Moline, John's son.
Okay.
And the first letter I read, and mind you, I was 6 months on the job, so I knew very little about Deere family history or John Deere in general. And the letters, the very top of the letter said, strictly confidential, underlined. And I thought, okay, well, this is good. And the letter went on to say, you know, your dad's out here. We're having a great time. But I want you to know that John's been kind of visiting some places with this woman, and we're not quite sure who she is. And I just want to give you a heads up because I may send you a telegram. And if I send you a telegram, that means you need to get on a train and get out of here. And at the end of the letter, it says, please treat this as if we were having a private conversation and burn this letter. And I thought, all right, now this is interesting to me. There was a second letter not long after, strictly confidential, said, hey, we've learned this woman's name is Mrs. Warren. And we don't really know what the deal is. Please light a cigar to this. And so I thought, man, this John Deere, this is a real
right.
guy. You know, I've got some dirty laundry here. So that's actually how the book started.
Well, I've read that book, and it's really a good. It's a for a popular audience. It's not an academic history.
No,
but it's really very well done. You've also done a children's book, haven't you?
I haven't done a children's book. I've been involved in a lot of those, and
okay.
that's as my role as archivist, as okay. we work with a number of authors writing articles, writing books.
Okay.
And because we like things to be right to the best that we know them to be.
You know, one of the things that surprises me is from time to time I read that someone going through records has made an amazing discovery. As something they didn't know existed and so on. And I thought, well, I thought people in charge of collections knew everything that was in the collection. And apparently that's not the case.
That's not the case. This comes up with me quite a bit. I estimate that I've spent about 12 years total in the archives because I had a 5-year period where I was actually working in the library at John Deere. So in my 12 years, I estimate I've probably seen 15 to 20% of our collection.
So, who knows what the rest is?
Who knows? And I always say when someone says, "Well, do you have this?" I say, "Well, I would never know to look for it until someone asked me for it."
Yeah.
But you know, I learned something very important in college, and I think this was the most important thing I ever learned. One of my history professors, Bill Urban, said, "When you go to the library, the book you need is next to the book you're looking for."
Which was one of the advantages of the card catalog.
Exactly.
Oh, I mean, I found more stuff by going too far.
Yeah.
And now you can't do that.
Exactly. And so I train my staff in the archives. I say, you know, you can look something up in the catalog, but you have to treat the collection as if a catalog doesn't exist. The catalog is a starting point because you did a keyword search. You found something that may or may not be relevant. And my habit this entire time is I will go, I'll pull that box. I'll find what I'm looking for, and then I'll sit down and I'll read everything in the box. Mm-hmm. And the hope is that 3 years later, someone will ask me a question, and I'll have a vague recollection of, yeah, you know, I think we have something like that, hoping that that's going to kind of jog my memory. And, of course, after 12 years, you start to put some pieces together of things that, again, if they're cataloged at an item level, sometimes related documents aren't together. Now you start putting some of those pieces together and making connections, and I think that's the fun.
I think sometimes people ask me, do you have this? I say, yes, I do. Where is it? In the house. But that's all I know. It's somewhere in the house. And, you know, you get the idea when you talk about archives that everything is laid out in a precise, orderly fashion, and you know where everything is. But the stuff that keeps coming in, I don't know how you keep track of it.
We actually have much better intellectual control over what's coming in because we're getting better. And it tends to be more uniform than it was in the past. And we're much better at throwing things away, which whenever I say that, it scares people. But it's one of the most important functions we serve, which is determining what we're keeping and not keeping. For example, we estimate we have 3 million photos. An example I use is if we take 500 photos of an 8400R tractor, why would I ever need more than five?
Yeah.
Because if I have a profile view and I have 100 of them, there's nothing that I'm going to see in the rest that I didn't see in the first couple. But people are very scared to throw the rest away just in case. And part of my job is getting rid of the just in cases, because all of a sudden everything is just in case and you're a hoarder.
Yeah, well,
my job is not right. To hoard materials.
Well, that's my problem. I'm a hoarder. I can't throw things away.
Yeah.
That's tough.
Yeah, it gets easier. Well, and there's also legal implications probably to keeping records as well. You know, if you keep everything, the chances of finding any of it is reduced. So mm-hmm. if you can kind of manage what's coming in, then in theory, and this is usually the case, you have a better chance of actually finding it and retrieving something.
It sounds like a very interesting job, Neil, I must say. And the discoveries are possible every day.
Discoveries are possible every day. You have to have a very – we're very Jekyll and Hyde. You have to be able to work with people and talk to people, convince people to give you their records. But you also have to be pretty comfortable sitting in a room by yourself for 8 straight hours and just writing on folders. And there's benefit to both.
But I imagine you have a number of projects that are run in parallel all the time.
We have quite a few projects, and of course now we're producing videos, we're writing content for the John Deere Journal online, we're taking antique tractors to shows, we're involved in a little bit of everything, which is a lot of fun, and then we actually do have an archive in Germany. We've got historical collections in China, so that's another aspect that's really fascinating as well. And every time John Deere acquires a company, we get to review records because part of John Deere's legacy is managing the histories of those companies as well.
How do five people keep up with all that?
We do the best we can.
Wow.
Yeah. You know, when you're in an archive like this that involves people as well as a business and machines as well as business records, legal obligations, an obligation to serve history. How do you keep all that straight?
Sometimes I don't know how we keep all of that straight. We spend a lot of time talking about why we're doing something. We work really hard to be realistic with people. Of course, the expectation now is, can't you just look that up on your computer and send it to me in the next 5 minutes?
Mm-hmm.
Regardless of whether it was created in 1890 or a week ago, You know, we're in a very counterintuitive business because the more recent the content is, the less stable it is, the more at risk it is for deterioration. And I, you know, when we give tours to employees and I show them a 16 millimeter film from 1935 and I say, this is stable, it's got 100 to 150 year life expectancy, then I pull a VHS tape out that they recognize and I say, this is the most at-risk item in our collection because it's 25 years old and it has a 20 year life expectancy. So we're kind of working backwards in terms of capturing those materials.
Does your do the archives at Deere extend to relatives like the Veelys? If I wanted to look up stuff on the Veely monocoupe, would I find it?
It extends in limited kind of limited cases. The Veelys, we don't have a lot. We'll have correspondence from some of the family members in relation to their time at Deere serving on the board or running a branch house. But as far as what the Veely Manufacturing Company created, we don't really have any of those records. I subscribe to the Veely Long Life is the Veely Collector newsletter. Okay. That's where we get our information from. So we're out, you know, trying to gather this information as well.
Now that's when you get into legal matters, I imagine any business is challenged on several levels. How do you get involved in things like that?
When it comes to legal matters, it's really about producing records is our role in that. We work with the law department. We work with paralegals. They'll have specific requests for records. Our job is to either produce the record or demonstrate that we've done the research and we're unable to produce the record. There may be cases where we have to serve as an expert on a subject or something that will prep for, but that's pretty rare. It's happened once in my career. Mm-hmm. But really it's about producing material.
All right. You have all of this material, analog, all the rest. What are you missing?
Well, I probably don't know unless somebody asks me for it and I can't produce it. But really what we've been focused on for the last couple of years is it's really important to kind of build out chronologies of divisions of certain companies. So and certain product lines. We started on a project about 3 years ago to document the history of precision agriculture at John Deere. And we did that by working with our Intelligent Solutions Group, which is based in Des Moines. And precision agriculture really took off in the 1990s for Deere. And we wanted to make sure we got the story right. And we're fortunate because several of the engineers who helped create that business are still working at John Deere. And so that was a matter of saying, okay, well, we want to put a chronology together. This is one of the challenges as a historian, which is you're talking to people and they're using words you don't understand, and they're talking about frequencies and satellites and all of these things that I don't quite understand. So getting them on tape talking about it, building out a chronology that we had a partnership with Stanford, then we had a partnership over here, and then we developed this on our own. And so you put together that story, then it was about finding the primary sources, which is give me the marketing plan that you pitched in 1996 to a president and tell me what they said.
We could go on forever, but we've just run out of time.
Boy.
Neil Dahlstrom, thank you very much for taking us through the complexities of the Deere Archive. I'm Don Wooten with Roll Tweet. We'll see you next week on the next edition of Scribble.